America, live and underway here on ESPN alongside Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. This is episode 340. And Herc, you look like you're dressed in your Sunday's best. What you got on over there?
Oh, yeah, our good friends at Charleston sent me. You know, I'm a sucker for a good Hummel kit. So thanks to the people out in Charleston, you know, the battery.
What about the top there? Are you wearing the same jacket I am? What's going on?
Estamos de luto.
I was about to say, yes, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, we are dressed for a funeral, some might say. We might be burying at least the men's side of Mexican soccer. You'll appreciate this. La Lotería, la triste. La triste. Oh, thanks. Good work here on the graphic. I had to cover that up for me. All right, so Herc, shall we get to it?
Yes, please.
Shall we get to it? The matter at hand. We're going to have Ali Krieger stop by in a little bit. Mauricio Pedrosa as well. Get us the Mexican perspective on what happened in Arlington, Texas. But let's start with the U.S. perspective, because it was the Americans, Herc, that won their third straight CONCACAF Nations League and once again established themselves as the top dog in all of CONCACAF. All right, we'll pick it up with the what was on the line. Look at Miguel Layun out there handling
Omar Gonzalez
the trophy
too.
That's right. 5 minutes in, U.S. on the attack. First good chance for the Americans. Christian Pulisic one-on-one with Memo Ochoa, and Memo makes a save.
Massive save by Memo. Watch this right here. A little touch by Gio Reyna to keep the play alive, and then this beautiful touch by Christian Pulisic to settle, and big-time save by Ochoa.
Scoreless then as Pulisic had his first chance of the game denied by the aging Mexican goalie. Mexico would not have a lot of opportunities in this game, but they'd have a pretty good one in the 22nd minute off the throw-in. Luis Chavez on his left foot. Herc can't beat Matt Turner.
Yeah, it's a bit of a half chance. Comes off a throw-in. Bad just defending from the U.S. men's national team. Matt Turner's there. He's ready.
The Serginho Dest show was on in this one. Gets the shot off with that left foot. Didn't miss by much.
Yeah, and he's been so good in tight space. He's very confident in this game. Hits a rocket with the left. Didn't work out there.
It worked out here, though, on the stroke of halftime. Speaking of strokes, Tyler Adams from distance.
Yeah, where do we start here? This is off a corner kick that gets recycled, work around Weston McKennie to Tyler Adams, of all people.
We start with, do you think it's on Memo? Because that's what a lot of people south of the border are saying.
Yeah, so initially I did not, but speaking to Casey Keller, U.S. men's national legend, and Osvaldo Sanchez post-game of Televisa, they both thought it was on Memo.
Memo, perhaps to be blamed here as well, as Gio Reyna makes it 2-0. Herc at the near post.
Yeah, he's part of the blame. This ridiculous move from Christian Pulisic to chop up Uriel Antuna. And this right here, Johan Vasquez, get the ball out! Get it out! He doesn't, and then near post Memo, one of the many errors here. Memo's to blame, yes. Ultimately responsible for this, there are a few others as well.
2-0, or as they like to say around these parts, 2-0, and Greg Berhalter and company celebrating on the outskirts of Dallas. 72nd minute, Mexico looking for a penalty, and Santiago Jimenez gets it. At least for a second, there would be a VAR review, and it's pretty clear he didn't even get touched.
No, he didn't get touched. First glance, you know, got off your feet. Look, step up. No, he didn't touch him. And he's going to get a yellow card for simulation.
Anthony Robinson, innocent, as the VAR confirms. No penalty for Mexico there, so missing out on a chance to at least get back in the game. And then in the 88th minute, the match stopped by the Canadian official, Drew Fisher. It was actually stopped multiple times over the homophobic chant. You can see the Mexico fans there starting to stream out in the 90th minute with their team down 2-0, and that is indeed how the game would finish by a final score of 2-0, the USA finishing off the three-peat.
It feels great. That was our focus. You know, we talked about it in the beginning of the camp. I showed the Michael Jordan slide when he's holding up the three fingers with the trophy, and that's what we wanted. Also, we photoshopped the Nations League trophy into the same picture of Michael Jordan, so that was what we were focused on. You know, it doesn't happen too often. I think in North American sports in the last 50 years, pro sports, has probably happened 6 times. So it's rare. And, you know, congratulations to the guys. Congratulations for playing a great final. I think that's the other thing that needs to be said, is that we really performed well tonight. And, you know, we're happy.
Yeah, no. First off, I'm excited to be back with this group. This team means a lot to me. We've been through a lot. I've known them all for a long time. And obviously, Greg has done an amazing job. So when I knew I was starting, I was really excited, of course, because I know the impact that I can have. Not scoring goals like that all the time, but I'm happy that I can hit one like that today.
I think it's big for momentum. I think we've been together with our core group for a while now, and I think we know what it takes to win big games and tournaments, and hopefully we can carry that into Copa America and, you know, have a great run there and maybe even lift a trophy. So that's a little bit far down the road, but I just want to enjoy tonight with the guys.
Well, there's been three CONCACAF Nations Leagues all time, and the USA has won all three. There you see Mexico having some success when it came to the Gold Cup, but the Nations League very much property of the USMNT. Kirk, there's probably a lot of places we could start, but where do you want to start as far as your keys to why the U.S. was so dominant in this performance over Mexico?
Listen, we could talk tactics, and Greg Berhalter has a lot in this. We got to give him his flowers. He's dominant over Mexico, and we will talk about Greg Berhalter. But can we just start with talent? I think that's the biggest issue here, is the talent level in one program and the lack of talent in the other program. And the Mexican national team post-game was talking about that lack of talent. The U.S. men's national team in the game took advantage of that lack of talent. You look at these two programs, and the starting 11 for the U.S. men's national team, seven of those players played in England, six of them in the Premier League, one in the Championship. There's one in the Eredivisie. There's one in Serie A. You know, big teams like Milan. There's players in good moments. And you look at the opponent, and it's sparse. Probably their most informed players doing the best in Europe at the moment, offensive player, I should say, Santi Jimenez, can't even get on the field. And when you look at the two programs and where they're heading, one has over 100 players scattered, littered around, you know, Europe, whatever types of leagues they want. The other, they're screaming to be let go. They're screaming to be sold cheaply so they can start their European adventures. And there's just a stark difference in quality and the quantity of that quality abroad. And I think this is the most evident thing here. I can't recall a time where the difference in talent between the two was so one-sided in favor of the U.S.
Yeah. Kirk, when I saw that this was your answer, I looked at the two 11s. And, you know, this is something we always do at ESPN. We always do it on ESPN FC, the combined 11. And I'm looking through the Mexico 11 versus the U.S. 11. There's not one Mexican player that you say, oh, yeah, he gets in a combined 11. There's maybe two guys who you can look at and you have to make a case for them. You can maybe make a case for Edson, not based on last night against Tyler Adams, but I think you could make a case. And then you could make a case for Santiago Jimenez, but the problem with that is he can't get even into Mexico's 11. He might be the best nine in both pools, but he's not getting into Mexico's 11. So you have nobody truly in this Mexican teamwork that would guaranteed, without a doubt, make a combined 11. When else in the history of this rivalry have we ever been able to say that? And the other thing that's very clear is that both sides know about this talent difference that you're talking about. We heard Greg Berhalter there, right? They're talking about legacy and three-peat before this game. Mexico's talking about where are their guys playing and where aren't we playing, right? That's the excuse attitude that Mexico had coming into this game. You look at what Greg Berhalter and those guys were talking about. They're talking about winning, and you see it, Herc. You see it in how these teams play. I think Mexico has their worst performances against the United States, and I think the U.S. saves their best performances against Mexico, and that's considering, in this case, Herc, the U.S. had played an extra 30 minutes in the semifinal that the Mexican team, they didn't have that. So, yeah. You know, of all the things that Mexico could have potentially found a little bit of an advantage of in this game, right down to the form coming in off the Jamaica game, even those things didn't play out. And that, for me, is why I'm going a little bit different with my choice. I'm going with the lineup that Greg Berhalter chose, and specifically some of the big decisions that he made as kind of why the U.S. was able to dominate so easily here. Now, the first thing that's obvious, man, is the amount of changes. To make five changes in your lineup to the team that you put out in the semifinals, to make five changes to a lineup before a final, that's a lot. But it was very much needed based on what we saw against Jamaica. And if you think of the changes that were made, and some of them were obvious, right? You're obviously going to put in Sergiño Dest if you've got him available. But they all had an impact. Tim Ream, I would say unexpectedly solid in defense. Sergiño Dest, I mean, we saw it in the highlight. There was probably four more clips that didn't make it. That's how good he was. Tyler Adams, Herc, massive risk. A guy you know you can only play for 45 minutes. You start him, so you create an issue for yourself at halftime, and he rewards you with a just unbelievable golazo in the 44th minute. Haji Wright maybe didn't have his best game, but it's clearly the right call to play him after he scores two. And the biggest decision of all, which is, again, pretty obvious, is Gio Reyna in that starting lineup. He's the difference maker. He gets the goal that clinches. And I think the other thing that's important about Reyna here is he was better for me in the second half than the first. And I don't know if that sounded Gio figuring something out or if that was something that they changed in the locker room at the half, because he was in much more dangerous spots in the second half than in the first.
I think that's it. He was in more dangerous spots. He was operating very, very deep in the first half. And maybe that's by design. Maybe coming and picking that off the center back is by design for Gio Reyna and trying to pick and choose where to operate and maybe launch some of those services. That's what they were going for. But this goal by Tyler Adams, which was a massive, massive gamble, really opened things up for the U.S. men's national team. Listen, it's not crazy to start Tyler Adams. I don't think anybody in their right mind is going to say, why would you start one of the most important players you have? I understand starting Tyler Adams. I think it's wild you start him and you go into it only saying he's only going to play 45 minutes. That's a massive gamble. But this gamble paid off for Greg Berhalter. You said Tyler Adams repaid that trust? Absolutely. And from reports, he was angry at halftime and they got an argument because he had to come off. But that's where he is today in his minutes count. And the agreement that Greg Berhalter, which I hate these agreements that the U.S. Men's National Team does with the with other club teams. We've seen it before with Dortmund. We've seen it before with Chelsea, et cetera, where they come to terms on the amount of time their players can play. National team, that's your ground. You make the decision. But it worked for him. Tim Ream, you don't play him against Jamaica, which if you think is your best center back, you have to play him against Jamaica to rest him because he's an aging Tim Ream, and it pays off. Though I thought Tim was good with his passing and the passes that worked. A little sloppy in possession. I think he lost like 21 times, but I think Chris Richards wasn't too far off, so there was a little bit by design there. But everything he wanted to do, Greg Berhalter, like he's done versus Mexico, has pressed all the right buttons against Mexico.
All right, what about Gio Reyna? Named the best player of the tournament. Hard to argue that, and probably increasingly difficult at this point, Herc, to argue against his spot in any 11 for the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, man, I use the example of Christian Pulisic, you know, last go around. It really does remind me of Christian Pulisic when he wasn't playing at Chelsea. These guys, these two, have used the U.S. men's national team as a refresher, a way to escape that dark side of their game, a way to get somewhere where they can be fresh, where they could be lively, where they can have fun and enjoy the game again. And that's what he did here. It's exactly what he did for the U.S. men's national team in another final. There's some crazy stat that we saw thrown out in social media about his game or his goal involvement, the amount of times he's been involved in goals in finals. He's already the all-time leader in that category for the U.S. men's national team. He's 21, Seb. He's 21.
Yeah, it's wild, man. He's going from, I think, like talent to player, right? At least at the international level. When I think of a guy who's talented, I think of a guy who can do the things that Gio Reyna does and certainly did in this semifinal and final, but maybe can't do it consistently. He's now doing it consistently with the national team. It's still to be determined if he can be go from kind of talent to player at the club level. But at the international level with this team, he is very clearly hurt that guy. And I think that's kind of the biggest takeaway for me here from Gio Reyna. He did this with 80 minutes of playing time at the club level in 2024. The last time he played more than 10 minutes in a game was February 10th. That's a month and a half before the start of these two games. Once he gets his club sorted, man, forget what he's going to do for the U.S. He's going to kill CONCACAF. He's going to absolutely destroy it.
Yeah, it's what he does at the club level. Listen, Christian Pulisic went from a very, very bad situation at Chelsea where he was on the outs to a very good situation where he's now doing very well and he's an important piece for AC Milan. I've got no doubt Gio Reyna can do the same. Use the U.S. men's national team to get your confidence back up, get yourself where you want to be, and go back to your club situation and figure it out. Get somewhere where you fit, where you play. Mm. And this kid plays, the stats are going to come with it.
That's right. And don't forget, people are watching during an international break. Greg Berhalter said it before. One of the reasons he brought Gio in, he used the word showcase. Anybody that watched the U.S. that's a club personnel director right now, they saw a showcase of exactly what Gio Reyna can do. A little bit further up the field, Herc, we have the number 9. Where are we now after these two games on the nonstop question of the U.S. number 9 depth chart?
Can I be honest? Does it matter? And just bear with me for a second, because let's go back to when Greg Berhalter started with the U.S. men's national team. Who mm-hmm. was his starting nine? Josie Altidore. Let's go back to when the World Cup qualifiers started around. Who was his starting nine? Josh Sargent. Let's go back to who saved his job. Who was his nine? Ricardo Pepi. And then somewhere along the lines, Jesus Ferreira comes in, and then it's Haji Wright in the biggest game versus England, arguably the biggest game of your World Cup versus England. It's Haji Wright. And then it's, again, we're throwing a Brandon Vasquez into the mix. And there seems to be this rotating door when it comes to the nine. And I don't really think it matters. And now we have Balogun. And I don't think it matters. And the reason is because in this system, and I've said it many times before, the nine's not going to score you goals. That's not his job. That's not what he does. They have to facilitate for the goal dangerous wingers. So for Greg Berhalter, I don't think it matters on who's the nine. I think Greg Berhalter is going to ride who he thinks either has the hot hand or is going to be the best suited against this opposition to make guys like Gio Reyna better, to make guys like Christian Pulisic better, to make guys like Timothy Weah better. This nine in this system is a system player, and that sort of worries me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of number nine by committee, to borrow like an American football term, right? When they do running back by committee, whoever's the hot hand. The one thing that I think is kind of the best evidence of that is how quickly things can change, right? Haji Wright was pretty clearly, according to Greg Berhalter, the fourth best forward, right? When this roster was named. That's why he left them off and then calls him in when he has the Josh Sargent injury. If that guy can go from fourth to starting the final, that means there's a lot of space for like up and down movement in that number nine. And I think right now, Herc, you gotta say, Haji Wright is in that pole position, especially if we consider, well, Herc, there's no more games, right? At this point, all you're gonna really have to go on with these guys is club form. I'm not about to bet against Haji Wright and think that he's suddenly going to start, you know, to go cold at Coventry. Them. If he stays hot at Coventry, based on what we saw this window, how, when we get to those games in June, are you not starting them?
Listen, you've got, there's no buts from me on that. I'm not the guy that said Balogun's the clear best forward or nine in this team or in this pool of players, and there's no question about it. So why wouldn't you play your best nine if the gap is so evident? I don't think it's that evident. I do think there is a competition. I just don't think Greg Berhalter has a pole position leader in that competition. Mm. I really do think it's a system, and within that system, the opposition, the profile of striker, and I know if you've heard this before, really comes into play.
All right, odd man out. Come June, if you're only taking three, who's your odd man out of the four?
Dude.
It's tough.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I want to keep Ricardo Pepi in there because of what he's done in the last, 10 games that he's come off the bench for the U.S. men's national team. He scored goals. He's got 7 goals in like 10 games, 5 of those off the bench. But he's not playing club football. Balogun's not playing well at the moment. He is playing club football, just not well. Josh Sargent, you can't keep the kid from scoring when he's healthy, but he's not healthy right now. That's a difficult one. I don't think you can make that call now. I really think it's hot hand when it gets there, and you go with the three.
Okay. All right, let's go a little bit bigger picture here. As somebody who knows this U.S.-Mexico rivalry well, Herc, what is the significance for the U.S. of this CONCACAF Nations League three-peat?
I don't think they're... Hold on. It means more to Mexico that they lost three in a row than it does for the U.S. men's national team that they won three in a row. So it cements the legacy within CONCACAF. What does that mean? I mean, we know Greg Berhalter can dominate CONCACAF. We know Greg Berhalter can dominate Mexico. Are you going to forget that he was 2 seconds away from going home against the Jamaica team without 6 starters? Are we going to forget that this U.S. men's national team under Greg Berhalter has not done anything that previous U.S. men's national teams besides Mexico have not done? Take Mexico away, because you want to dream bigger than CONCACAF. Bruce Arena against Portugal stunned them. Round of 16 beat Mexico. Was a blown handball, no penalty kick that Greg Berhalter should have had, away from going to a semifinal versus Germany. 2010, that generation won their group in the World Cup. They also in 2009 took away a 35-game unbeaten streak for the Spanish national team that had two Euro Cups and a World Cup sandwich in between. They did that. Jurgen's generation, they beat Italy in Europe. They beat Germany. They beat Holland. They went to the World Cup in 2014 in the group of death. They got out of that group. What has Greg Berhalter's U.S. men's national team, this U.S. men's national team, done that they haven't? The only difference here is Mexico. So what does it mean to the U.S. men's national team legacy? It's just more ammo against Mexico, more credibility against Mexico. That is it.
As far as the rivalry is concerned, Herc, right, there's been lots of ebbs and flows over the years. I was looking this up. So basically, from October 2013 until May 2021, right, so a real time frame of almost 8 years, the U.S. won zero competitive matches against Mexico. Now, by any definition, that's dominance. And yet, if you go back to that time, there was not a single USA-Mexico game where either side probably went into it saying, we're going to win definitely, right? You genuinely, when these two teams would play, you didn't know how it was going to turn out. And that's where I think the biggest difference is here. This three-peat has solidified that not only is the U.S. better than Mexico, right, but that we now know that the U.S. are favorites when they play Mexico. That, to me, is a remarkable change. And I don't know that this has been the case in this rivalry since like the 80s. Yeah. Really, if you think about when this rivalry started to turn, it was early 90s. By about the mid-90s, there was some doubt as to who would win when these two play. There's no doubt anymore. There's no doubt. Anybody betting on Mexico is just throwing away their money.
It's difficult right now, and there are ebbs and flows, and this can change, though it's not looking like it's going to change anytime soon by the way these programs are trending. We always hear this. If they play 10 times, maybe they lose once. If they've played 7 times, they're not lost yet. So we're heading into that so-called, it's very dominant and it's almost a given territory.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, right? They've beaten Mexico in two of these finals. They also beat Canada in one of the other finals. They've played a bunch of other teams from CONCACAF. So it's not just dominance over Mexico. It's also dominance over your region, which is very valuable. But to the graphics point and to your point, Herc, you're not going to get to play only CONCACAF in Copa America. And you're not going to get to play only CONCACAF in the World Cup. There will be stiffer tests for sure in the future. Speaking of the future, let's take a look at the U.S. summer schedule. Because as we said, they got a bit of a break now with the club season wrapping up. Next time they'll be together June 8th against Colombia in Washington, D.C. Then June 12th against Brazil in Orlando. All that ahead of the Copa America opener against Bolivia, June 23rd in Dallas. And for more on the Mexican perspective from last night's CONCACAF Nations League final, thrilled to welcome into the show our good friend and colleague, Mauricio Pedrosa. Mau, great to have you with us. What hurt more, another 2-0 or your wild weekend in Mexicali with producer Beto, huh?
So the game last night, I'm over it. My body's not over that intense and wild weekend in beautiful Mexicali with our producer Beto. And I don't know how much time I will need
Your wife was present.
That.
Please clarify that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Please. Everybody was under intense supervision down there.
Century. Yes.
In Mexicali. All right. Let's get to it. Your thoughts on this defeat for Mexico, Mau. Not the first 2-0 we've witnessed in recent times to the U.S.
No. Foreseeable. I think there was a reason, at least, for optimism from the Mexican national team side after what happened against Panama and the performance that the U.S. had against Jamaica. We thought there were some weaknesses in the U.S. team that Mexico could exploit, but that didn't happen. It was 10 to 15 good minutes from Mexico, and then just the one chance by Luis Chavez. Other than that, nothing really in terms of creating opportunities, good build-up, chemistry within the team. So it is really, really concerning. I thought about that stat earlier today. It's been one goal in the last 6 games against the U.S. I think that says a lot. And I feel, Seb and Herc, to me, the most discouraging thing is I used to be upset when defeats like this happen. We were in Vegas almost a year ago when Diego Coca lost his job. And I remember being upset, very, very mad. Now, and this is probably the stages of grief, right? Now I've moved on to sadness. Now I'm just sad when I see the result because I go back and think, Do we have the elements to change this, to hope for a different outcome? And the answer is no.
You know, Seth, I don't think I've ever seen fans this dejected. And I understand because they're fans, right? You put so much emotion, so much of, you know, you project so much onto the field of where you want to be, where you want to see the Mexican national team. And I understand the fans' sentiment. But the dejection, the loss of hope on the Mexican national team players, that for me was like, whoa, what's going on here? I watched the post games in Spanish and El Chiquito Sanchez, you know, being interviewed. And, well, they have more players in Europe. You know, we need to change things. Chucky Lozano, well, you know, they have better players, this and that. It's the hope that kills you. And they've lost it. And it's not the fan that gets me. It's these players. When the players lose the hope, that for me yesterday was a little eye-opening.
Yeah, Mexico didn't just lose, man. They were dominated in this game. There was like no threat that Mexico was ever going to really, you know, trouble the U.S. And I think beyond that, you know, from a Mexican perspective, there was a long time where the U.S. could beat Mexico with things like corner kicks and set pieces and physicality and strength. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing that anymore. The U.S. is beating Mexico with better soccer. And I think for the Mexican sporting ego, that's probably both from a player, media, fan perspective, that's what's got to cut deepest about these defeats. You're not losing to the U.S. the way you used to lose to the U.S. You're losing in a different and what I think is probably a more humiliating way ultimately for the Mexican fan. Let's get some more post-game reaction from Arlington. We'll hear from both of the Lozanos, Jimmy the manager and Chucky the winger.
Yo creo que es jugadores en las mejores ligas. Esto te da otros contextos, evidentemente te da la posibilidad de otra competencia a nivel internacional. Y lo he dicho muchas veces, creo que es formar mejor en nuestro país y vender a edades tempranas es lo mejor que nos puede pasar como, en este caso, mi seleccionador, pero sobre todo a la selección nacional, esté quien esté. Creo que ellos estuvieron mucho más claros que nosotros. Nos presionaron y nos presionaron bien y no pudimos encontrar soluciones para intentar salir jugando y no dividir tanto el balón. Creo que físicamente ellos estuvieron mejor el primer tiempo, bastante mejor. Y el segundo tiempo creo que con algunos ajustes y un poco con la desesperación y arriesgar un poco más que necesitábamos hacerlo a base de balones largos, porque al no encontrar soluciones a lo mejor en el juego colectivo a base de balones largos y con dos puntas, creo que lo que logramos fue acercarnos más, no generamos alguna tan clara, pero acercarnos un poco más y me parece que ellos también con el resultado a favor de dos goles, pues también lo que querían era proteger, ¿no? Ya proteger esta ventaja.
All right, no Chucky Lozano there, but Herc, you basically told us what he said. Mal, what do you make of Jimmy Lozano's comments there that it's where, or rather, where they don't play that is the reason why Mexico's players are losing these games to the U.S.?
I mean, Captain Obvious, right, to start. Of course, if you have players performing at better leagues, better teams, obviously the level of competition and level of performance will increase. That's step number three. Because I keep hearing from pundits, former players, former managers that are now part of the media that insist, and this is the way they say it, Herc, correct me if I'm wrong, we have to send more players to Europe.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. It's not that you're going to take your phone and call Bayern Munich and ask him if they could please accept Luis Chavez. Arsenal. Can we please send Uriel Antuna? Just sit Bukayo Saka for a few minutes. Just let him play. No, the reason why there's no more Mexican players at that level is just because they're not good enough. It is as simple as that. They're just not good enough. The question is, why are they not good enough? What happened at the under 20, under 17 level? Mexico didn't qualify for the U20 World Cup. Mexico is not playing in the Olympics. That is, to me, the first problem that has to be addressed. And I know Jimmy Lozano sort of touched on that matter. But the whole thing about, listen, the whole squad, they all play in Europe. And the way they train, the way they practice, the teammates that surround them, the managers they work with. That's step three or four. Step number one and two is you got to create a situation to have more talent. Because we keep saying about players like Cesar Montes. We need 10 Cesar Montes per generation every 4 years. Maybe six of them will stay and play and be good in Liga MX. Three of them will go and play in Europe. One of them will go and play South America in Major League Soccer. But as long as Mexico does not recognize that that is the problem, then results like this are going to keep happening.
Yeah, if we're talking about last night, it's a combination of two bad tactics, even though Sebi and I have said before this team should be more pragmatic. The U.S. men's national team waited for them. Tim Ream told our Jeff Carlisle they knew exactly what was going to happen. And Greg Berhalter being Greg Berhalter with the Mexican national team, he knew exactly what was going to happen.
It's Pep Guardiola every time he matches again.
And what happened, happened. But I will say this. I've never in my life seen a situation where the Mexican press have been on a circus call. And it's all the shows. It's a deep dive into what can change, how can we change, when can we change it. And everything I've seen, heard, read, or watched is about Liga MX. It starts and finishes with Liga MX, with the amount of foreigners, with this or that. It's all wrong. Because if you are depending on Liga MX to strengthen your national team, you're going about it the wrong way. The Federation, the Mexican Federation, needs to be more independent. The owners of the teams of Liga MX clubs can't have a say, can't have the say, all the say, in what happens in the national team. What's good for Liga MX, foreign players, retaining talent, etc., is not good for the growth of the Mexican national team. What's good for making money, playing in the United States, sending all your games there, is not good for the Mexican national team. You need to be independent from Liga MX. That is a major problem.
Yeah. Jimmy Lozano may not be wrong here, but I hate this. I hate the fact that this seems like it was spreading through the dressing room before this game was even played. You mentioned Chiquito Sanchez said it in an interview. Jorge Sanchez said it in an interview. The manager comes out afterwards within 5 minutes of a loss. You got to come out and you're going to say, we don't have enough players in Europe. That's a loser mentality. You had that already in the microwave, ready to go. When you hit the field, you knew you weren't as good as that team. And that, to me, is not the way you got to go into this. And the other thing here is, if that's the solution, and Jimmy Lozano is telling me, oh, by the way, the only way to fix this is to start selling younger, that's an 8-12-year-away solution. That's not going to help Mexico in 2024, in 2026. So this is not in any way what I want to be hearing from the Mexican manager after he just got worked by the United States. It's nothing but pretextos. It's nothing but excuses. And you can't use that after a game like this. To me, it's just further evidence Jimmy Lozano is not the guy. We'll get to that a little bit later on. Let's ask about the number nine. Let's ask about the number nine, Mal, because I want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Henry Martin, still your boy? We still good there? You still riding that train?
Yeah, still my boy. I don't think the number nine was an issue. The players around the number nine, that was probably a bigger issue. I don't remember Henry Martin having a clear opportunity in front of Turner. It was not one of those games in which, whereas before, both wingers are getting chances, winning 1v1s. You have both number eights getting closer to the box and then having numbers up front, and then it's the number nine's fault for not scoring. That was not the case. Listen, Santi Jimenez could have started this game. The end result would have been the exact same. I think this will evolve as Santi Jimenez gets more, even more settled in Europe, scores more often, plays more often, then he'll have a better chance. But as for now, I mean, why would you take Henry Martin out when Santi Jimenez has been there? He also hasn't performed.
Mark?
Yeah, I think it goes beyond the coach's decision over, you know, Henry Martinez as the actual nine. Well, actually, no, it doesn't. I don't know why I say that, because I keep going back. I keep trying to defend Jimmy Lozano. I keep going back to when we were at the World Cup in Qatar, and we would see these viral clips of him working with Televisa, and he's up there with a depth chart, and he's showing the depth chart of the teams, you know, player per player, what he's got. And he's got Santi Jimenez as his number nine in 2026. He's got Acevedo and the goalkeeper with Luis Magón. You know, he's got all these players, a youth movement that he sold, the federation that he sold to get this job. And here we are. And I know you say it may not change things now, but I think it does change things. Because if you lose with Santi Jimenez on the field, you lose with Luis Malagón on the field, you lose with youth on the field, you can say, we're trying to do something. We're trying to start a process. We're trying to get somewhere. But what can you say now with this? You can't say that.
Yeah. Yep. Santi Jimenez, somehow, again, another Mexican manager that comes to a conclusion that nobody else understands. Santi Jimenez, not the starter in this one. All right, real quick on Memo Ochoa. Is that it, Mal? You think we've seen the end of him? Or do you think he gets another run in Copa America?
No, I think he'll get another run. I think he's a very powerful figure in Mexican soccer. I think there are other elements involved.
Forget that. Do you think he should get another run? I don't care about politics and powerful figures.
No. I said it on Tuesday when we were all together in the studio. I think it's Angel Malagón's time. I think Memo can be very, very helpful being part of the squad. I just think it's time. It's time for a fresh start with Angel Malagón as a starter.
Yeah, that's the problem here is this decision shouldn't be in question today. It should have been made after the World Cup. That should have been a swan song. So you avoid these situations because he'll have his games where it's lights out, Memo Ochoa, and he makes saves. But then every time there's an error or there's an inkling, it might have been his fault, we're going to have the same conversation. Should Memo Ochoa retire? This should have been just dealt with a long time ago.
Yes. Remember the name Alex Padilla, huh? Okay. 6'3" kid. Do you remember her when we did the 2026 look ahead rosters? You remember who my backup goalie was for Mexico?
Who was it?
It was Alex Padilla. He plays for Athletic Club de Bilbao, and he's just now with the Mexico U23s, I think.
Yeah, they played against Argentina.
Hey, he's a 6'3" goalie with Mexican roots. That's all I know, and that's all I need to know ahead of 2026.
4-2.
4-2 is the final score. That's Argentina. Give him some credit. All right, real quick on Jimmy Lozano. How do we feel about his job security, Mal?
Not good. I think he should be removed. I think a heavier hand, steadier hand is needed. And this is the way I see it. Whoever manages the team in Copa America 2024 has to be the 2026 World Cup manager. It doesn't make any sense if you're not going to take advantage of this tournament, if you're going to remove the manager then. But I don't feel like Jimmy Lozano is ready for that. He's still learning on the job.
For who? Mourinho can come here, Pep Guardiola is not going to change
Almada.
The pool.
Almada.
You're not changing the pool of players, and that's really what's at the root of this.
True.
It doesn't matter who the coach is. The players are going to stay the same. The results are going to be the same.
I mean, he got the lineup wrong, he got the game plan wrong, and he got the in-game management wrong. There's got to be somebody somewhere near Mexican football that can get one of those three things right come Copa America. At least that's what L3 fans should
Keep
be hoping
looking,
for. We'll
right?
see
the other three couldn't
if it's
do it.
Jimmy
I guess
Lozano.
Look for more.
There you go. All right, there it is. Mauricio Pedros, as always, great to have you with us here on Football America.
Bring me back whenever Mexico wins.
Might be a minute. Copa America play-in games this weekend, Herc, in Texas. We'll start with Canada and Trinidad and Tobago going down in Frisco. This one's 0-0 into the second half when Canada finally got their opener. It came from Kyle Laren in the 61st minute.
All right, Mallorca. Look at Kyle Laren, Tage Buchanan driving through. A little bit of a fortunate bounce here, but a great finish with the left foot.
Canada would get a second in stoppage time. Jacob Schaffelberg doing it in MLS and doing it at the international level as well.
Man, this kid's got a rocket on that left foot. Knows finds himself in great opportunities. He's fast. He hits the hell out of the ball. Another golazo.
Canada going to win, final score of 2-0. They qualify for the Copa America. They'll be in Group A there with Argentina, Peru, and Chile. The second play-in game, also in Frisco, the nightcap, Costa Rica against Honduras. Good friend of the show, Andy Nahar, the captain there for Honduras. 10 minutes in, the Catrachos get a goal, not just any goal, a golazo from Michael Chirinos. How about this volley?
Okay, the volley's sick. But the whole buildup is just ridiculous. I mean, what are we doing here? Who's going to lay this off outside of the foot and then have a banger like that? It's a ridiculous golazo. Look at this angle, Seb.
Yeah. You think this was an intentional layoff?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
I do.
It's a beautiful golazo there as Honduras were sailing early on as they go up 1-0 in this Central American Classic. However, Costa Rica would get right back into it. No surprise, it came from a set piece. Orlando Gallo with the rebound here.
Oh, keeper. That's not the usual starting goalkeeper playing right there. It's a flick on header, and then you've got to parry that wide. May have been difficult, but that's all the difference right there.
1-1 into the second half. Costa Rica attacking. They're going to make it 2-1 through Warren Madrigal.
Yeah. Now, you can see maybe not all the habitual players playing for Honduras. A bunch of injuries. Actually, I believe between injury and suspension, there was about 8 or 9 players missing, and Costa Rica taking advantage of that.
Golazo there to make it 2-1. 6 minutes later, Costa Rica get a third. Jefferson Bremes, thanks to a deflection.
Yeah, it's really not on the goalkeeper. Bremes is going to take advantage of this one. But this deflection right here really changes the trajectory of the ball. Goalkeeper beat. 3-1.
That would be the final score as Costa Rica are through and into Group D with Brazil, Colombia, and Paraguay. You know what you need in your life, Herc? You need a CONCACAF Nations League third place match. That's what everybody needs. Jamaica against Panama. Just the one goal in this one, but it was spectacular. In the 41st minute from Serginho Dest. No, that's not Serginho Dest. That's Dexter Lembikisa, the right wing back, working with his left foot.
Give Lembikisa some respect, please. A little scissors right there over the ball, and then left-footed smash. Proved to be the game winner right here, right before the first half ended. A golazo.
Jamaica wins third place at the 2024 CONCACAF Nations League thanks to their 1-0 victory over Panama, and thanks to that absolute gem of a goal from Dexter Lembikisa. So what does it mean? Well, the Copa America groups are all filled out. 10 teams from CONMEBOL, 6 from CONCACAF. Herc, as a region, how do you think CONCACAF's going to fare this summer?
Oh, man.
Good.
All right.
Optimistic.
Well, let me explain myself. So right now, the best team in CONCACAF is the U.S. men's national team. We would say that, right?
By a significant amount.
All right. They don't necessarily have the best record against top 20 opposition. Mm-hmm. Let's go top 20 opposition in this tournament. You're going to have Argentina. You're going to have Brazil. You're going to have Colombia, Uruguay, and Mexico. Okay? You can beat Mexico. You have proven that. What about the other four? Are you going to beat Uruguay in your group to get out of that and then face, pick your poison, Colombia, who's on a 20-game unbeaten streak right now, or Brazil, who just beat England, by the way, and is in this transitional phase and could be a completely different team come summer? And what about Mexico on the other side? That's a very tricky group. Venezuela, who's got a ton of talent, Ecuador, who are very young and a very good team, very tricky, and Jamaica, who is Jekyll and Hyde. I don't know what to make of them. They could be lights out or a massive disappointment. And then who else? A Costa Rica team that's on the rise, looks different, but how will they compete? Canada in Argentina's group. We could be seeing an all CONMEBOL semifinal affair if CONCACAF doesn't bring their A game.
Yeah. I would just say it's not going to go well for CONCACAF, right? I will put the U.S. kind of to a side in a separate category. You look at the other five teams, far from the best version of Mexico, far from the best version of Canada, far from the best version of Costa Rica, and even if they are getting a little bit younger than they've been. Jamaica could be its best version, but you saw that interview with Leon Bailey. That sounds like a national team headed for a meltdown as opposed to kind of a high watermark later this summer. Panama, you might say, of all the teams, is kind of on the nice upward trend. And then they lay a couple of eggs this weekend. They got worked by Mexico, and we just hammered Mexico. So I don't see any of the teams really as like a lock, even to get out of the group. The only team that I see as like a sure thing from CONCACAF to get out of the group is the U.S. Even Mexico in that group, I don't know that they're a lock to get out. Yeah. The only team that for me is a legit semifinal threat is the United States. And I wouldn't be surprised, Herc, if it was 6 or 7 CONMEBOL teams in the quarterfinals.
The cross worries me for Mexico, because if you go in first place, you're gonna play Brazil or Colombia either way, first or second place. That cross worries me a lot for the U.S. men's national team. Mexico, if you can end up first place, I mean, you're talking about Canada, Chile, or Peru, and you beat one of them, you're in a semifinal. I think that's doable.
Say it's doable. You trust this Mexican team in a knockout round game against somebody that's already gotten through a group phase? We're talking about quality opposition. That's what I'm telling you, Herc. Mexico may get out of their group.
They could lay an egg. I'm just saying their cross is easier. And I think that's what really, really we need to concentrate here. You know, it's who's your opponent in that cross? And I think the U.S. men's national team is going to have a very difficult cross. Doesn't mean they're not a better team. It doesn't mean that Panama isn't a better team. It doesn't mean that Jamaica may not be more of a threat. But I think if you can get out of that group, which I think is very tricky, and people don't realize how tricky it is for Mexico, but if you can get out of that group first place, you've got a shot of making a semifinal.
Yeah, and I think CONMEBOL is going to dominate this. And I know that sounds like obvious to everybody, but if you actually go back to the beginning of U.S. and Mexico being invited into the Copa America, There was a good stretch in the 90s, early 2000s, where you'd always have at least one of them in the semifinal. Mexico played in a couple finals. I mean, that seems to me, outside again of the U.S., who could, I think, make a final, make a semifinal in this tournament, just seems to be like a total long shot
for
anybody.
You got to be one of those top 20 teams, Seb. Who are they beating? Which top 20 team are they beating? And from CONMEBOL, are you going to beat Argentina? Are you going to beat Brazil? Uruguay?
Argentina and Brazil, separate category.
Who are they beating?
Colombia? Colombia is the one, because Uruguay you're going to play in the group phase, so you're not playing them in a knockout round. I think the U.S. has a shot, a very good shot against Colombia.
20 games unbeaten.
At home.
Did you see what they did to Spain?
Yes.
Okay.
Friendly.
Okay.
Friendly.
Okay.
Friendly.
Okay.
Maybe we'll be talking about on that on the, some of the next editions of ESPN FC, which is available for you 7 days a week on ESPN+. They like to dabble in the international game from time to time over on that show. 5 p.m. Eastern time, they're live on weekends. 6 p.m. Eastern time, live on weekdays. Match day 2 of 26, done and dusted across the National Women's Soccer League after another great weekend of action. Utah victorious over North Carolina. Chicago gets the better of Seattle. Washington over Bay FC. Kansas City 2-0 after they beat San Diego. Gotham, big 1-0 win over Portland. A couple ties as well between Orlando and Angel City, as well as Houston and Louisville. For more on the NWSL, thrilled to welcome into the show our good friend and colleague, Allie Krieger. Allie, how was your weekend? Did I see you hanging out with Sue Bird? Man, you had a way better weekend than I did.
Yeah, we had a panel together, women's empowerment, equality, all the good things panel. And we really enjoyed it, had dinner after. It was great to catch up.
Wow. Talk about a power panel right there. That's exactly what we like to see. All right, Allie, let's dive into the weekend that was our game of the week. Is a team that you and I both have a lot of love for, and that's the Washington Spirit taking on Bay FC. This one in the nation's capital, rained all day in D.C. here on Saturday. Didn't make for the greatest conditions, but a good start to this one, Allie. Oshawala down the right wing picks out Dorian Bailey to make it 1-0 Bay FC.
Yeah, and I thought Dorian Bailey, you know, wanted to win against her old club too, and so this was great for her to get this goal, kept it low. Great cutback ball. You know, obviously the midfield wasn't prepared in defending that in the penalty area, and they had a really good start, it seemed like.
Spirit respond in the 23rd minute. Trinity Rodman setting up Hal Hirschfeld for her first pro goal, Allie.
Yeah, this was so amazing to see. Obviously so clinical, so clean, placed it. It looked purposeful. She did an excellent job on this detail. And so I'm really happy for her coming out of Clemson and just, you know, really making an impressive start.
And it was 1-1 into second half stoppage time. And then, sorry, we see Croy Bethune here get the game winner, Allie.
Yeah, this was so nice to see two rookies just dominate and have a great performance. I mean, it looks like she was in control. She knew exactly where she wanted to place it. She kept it low. And ultimately, you know, obviously was the game winner for them. And so it's really, really great to see, you know, two rookies step in and make these, you know, incredible goals that really needed to happen in order for them to be successful this week. And I thought the pressure that they put on Bay FC after they went down a goal was impressive. And the transition moments that they had were really clinical. And the way that they created the opportunities in the final third, you know, obviously unfortunately, they didn't get every single chance on target, but I think for the future, this is going to be a really good DC team that has purpose and identity, and in the form that they're in already at the beginning of the season is going to be a great start for them.
Yep, we know they got their real manager, Jonah Giraldez, the Barcelona guy, coming in the summer. They've also just signed Lacey Santos, a really, really good Colombian player, plays over in Spain for Atletico Madrid. She'll join in the summer as well. So the Spirit might not be a first half of the season team in the National Women's Soccer League, but I think by the time we get to the second half of the season, most importantly, Allie, the playoffs, you're probably going to see the Washington Spirit right there. Let's get to the player of the week. Quite a few choices here, Allie, because we had some great performances over the weekend in the NWSL. Who are you going with here?
I think Croy Bethune. I was so impressed with her and just the confidence she had on the ball, getting into little pockets and spaces and wanting to be on the ball and just being kind of that playmaker in the final third. She was really impressive from start to finish. She created a lot of chances. She put a lot of things on target. And then this touch was insane to me. I mean, to have that awareness, to keep it, you know, tight and to set herself up to have that, you know, low finish. Unfortunately, I thought, you know, the goalkeeper did have a decent game, but in the end, she knew exactly where she wanted to go. And she really made that, you know, those small little margins, a huge difference in this game and ultimately won the game for them. So that was really, really awesome to see.
And Bethune has some experience with the youth national teams for the U.S. Has played some with the U-15s, the U-17s. Just a couple years ago, she was getting called in to the U-23s. So definitely a name to remember for the future, both in the NWSL and maybe at the senior international level. Ali, my player of the week is a former teammate of yours, Esther, the goal-scoring and World Cup-winning Spanish forward for Gotham FC. She gets the only goal in their win over Portland. Not just any win over Portland either, Ali. A win away against Portland in front of, what, 19, 20,000 fans? I think they had a record crowd for opening day, and she shut them up there in the 71st minute. That's got to be a great feeling. It's her first goal, obviously, of the season. It's their first win of the season, and I got to tell you, it's a really, Ali, well-taken goal. I know this is a player that you have a lot of respect for, having played with her through the back half of last season.
Yeah, I mean, she has been such a change maker in our lineup or in the lineup of Gotham, even when I was still there. I mean, what she created coming right in immediately was this cool calmness, but also lethal just attack that we could count on her, that we could, you know, at least find her in any spot inside the 18, and she was going to create something from nothing. And so I do feel like she is so smart. She knows exactly where she should be, you know, in and around the 18 for, you know, the front three to be able to find her in those moments. And if you get her the ball, if you give her a little bit of space, she's really going to take advantage of that. And that's exactly what she did here. I feel like towards the end of the season, our head coach and our staff would always say, okay, these are the three or four spots that we always have to be in. And that cutback ball was definitely one of them. And I know we saw that in the final with Lynn scoring that goal when Midge had, you know, beat three players and had the cutback ball too around the penalty spot. So that was somewhat of a replicate of that. And I know that they've been working on that in training and throughout last year. And so to apply that to this game, to be in front of those fans in that atmosphere where Gotham won, you know, the last time that they played there, thinking that Portland wanted to get a little bit of revenge, this was really excellent to see them come into, you know, towards obviously the second half even, and really implement those principles and that attack more so than they had in the first half, where Portland was kind of putting them under the pressure and under the pump a little bit with Sophia getting some chances here and there. But ultimately, I think they held on really strong. They fought through it. And now, you know, they took the 3 points and are in a good spot, you know, playing away and in those conditions and in that atmosphere. Now, you know, that's a really good advantage to have at the start of the season.
Esther's goal, the 3,000th goal in NWSL league history. So a significant milestone there as well for, I'll remind everybody, my golden boot pick this season, Esther Gonzalez. So getting their goal right there. All right, Ali, time for your power rankings. The debut of a new segment here on Football Americas. You know how our production team works. They're always going to start at the bottom. So give us your bottom three here in Ali's NWSL power rankings. What do you got?
Well, yeah, I mean, Portland Thorns obviously coming off of two losses. That's really difficult. I think that, you know, now they have to turn this around and they have to start getting points because it's really not you know, good at the start of the season to really be down at the bottom of the table. And this is Portland Thorns. This is a team who has, you know, the most success in the league for years and years. And so, you know, I'm obviously understanding that this probably won't last long. These are the first couple games, but now they have to start ironing out those little details that, you know, might not be as good. So they need, in order to move forward and into, you know, moving up the table, they need to turn that around really quick. And then I put Houston down because they had a loss, you know, obviously to North Carolina the first you know, game of the season, and then tied Louisville this past weekend. And the performances have just been okay to me. Yes, they create a lot, but defensively, I think they struggle, other than Jane Campbell, who actually has been excellent for them, but she can only do so much. So I think team defending, individual defending, and then just capitalizing on those transitional moments will really help them move forward up the table eventually, you know, towards, you know, the rest of the beginning of the season. And then Angel City, I also had at the bottom of the table. I do think that they had a better performance against Orlando, but couldn't capitalize on the win and hold the 1-0 game against them. Obviously Marta, who is brilliant on that goal in the end, tied it 1-1. So unfortunately they couldn't get that win there. And then obviously their loss against Bay FC at the beginning of the season at home. And so to me, yes, they're coming into their own. These three teams, you know, are looking okay, but they need to try to iron out details. They need to get back on to the drawing board. They need to start playing with a little more purpose, start capitalizing on, you know, what they create in the final third. And then defensively, I think they have to tighten up. They have to stay more compact, more consistent. And then hopefully they can start turning it around at the beginning of this year.
Gotta say, I am surprised to see Portland in there, if for no other reason than they were my championship pick. Now, I will tell people, last year I picked Kansas City to win it all, and they finished next to last. So maybe I have really done it to Portland on this occasion. So we see Allie's bottom three in the power rankings. Let's go up to the top now, Allie. Who you got in your top three power rankings across the National Women's Soccer League?
Yeah, obviously Kansas City Current, who have had such an impressive start, even going down this past weekend 1-0 to San Diego, which is also, I think, one of the best teams in the league, even though now, you know, they lost their first game of the NWSL to them. You know, they're going to sit at the bottom of the table for a little bit, but it was an impressive game because they came back. They didn't allow that 1-0 start to really change the mentality. I feel like they kept focus, and earned their chances, and then obviously finished this one. Was such a great opportunity here. I felt like they were very organized. They showed that they have an identity. And then there has been seven different goal scorers and seven goals for Kansas City. And that just means, you know, this team is filled with players who can really create, who can really, you can depend on, who can be confident and consistent. And I do think that they've been really impressive already. Hopefully, you know, this will continue to last, because they can be a contender, I think, for a championship run, or at least get into the playoffs. And then, you know, obviously take care of business there, but they've been impressive to me. And then I have Gotham, just because they won against Portland away at Portland, and the players that they've, you know, gotten the offseason and have applied to the plan now. I think, unfortunately, I know that, you know, there have been some injuries, so obviously Rose and Lynn and now Midge possibly that we saw this weekend. So if they can get those players back into the squad, I think that they will be in a better place, obviously, to continue to build off of that performance in Portland. And then just because they won last season and they're champions, this is a team that, you know, has a lot to be proud of, and they're going to continue that and continue that ride, hopefully, at the beginning of the season to set them up, you know, for the rest of the year. And then Chicago, I think, just bouncing back off of a year that wasn't, you know, as expected for the individual players and also as a team. Their performances have been good. They're young. They're talented. They are amazing on transition so far. They immediately regain the ball and look to play the next ball forward and through the lines. I think that they're creating chances and they're getting chances on target. And that's been really enjoyable to see. And then, you know, they have two wins. So they're young, they're organized, their identity seems to be clear. And their transitional game for me was really impressive, especially this past weekend.
If memory serves, Allie, I believe it was you who picked Chicago as the number one turnaround team this season in the NWSL. So far, so good. Off to a very good start are the Red Stars. Let's get to our top five goals, Allie, from the weekend. And just like with individual performances, when it comes to golazos, lots to choose from. Number five, we're going to Kansas City against San Diego. Izzy Rodriguez. How about that? Kansas City gets the win at the snap, Allie.
Yeah, this was a bit of a deflection, right? But she did what she could with it, and she made something out of nothing. And just to have that awareness of where she was at that time, and to quickly turn and just chip, the goalkeeper at that moment, that was brilliant to me. And I was really happy that they came back and tied that at that moment.
Meanwhile, number four, Orlando Angel City. We've heard this name before. Marta, she still got it, Allie.
She does. At the very end of the game, when you need your best players to show up and create and score and make something happen, she obviously is world class. Look at this touch. First time off the volley, right into side netting. The goalkeeper had no chance. And so this was brilliant from her. I was really excited to see that. Unfortunately, LA couldn't keep, the 1-0 lead, but that was very impressive.
Number three, back to that Spirit Bay FC game. It's the Trinity Rodman to Hal Hirschfeld goal here. Good finish into that upper 90, Allie.
Yeah, and I'm sure Trinity is happy that she can, have a couple other players and not just Hatch to really create and combine with in the final third. And this goes to show you, this is only the first of us seeing, what can be the rest of the season. And that was amazing. I think obviously the center backs, the defenders do need to step there to give her less space. But ultimately, as a rookie, that was an amazing finish.
Washington 2-1 winners in that game. Our number two goal comes from Utah against the North Carolina Courage. Allie Centner, the number one overall pick. Allie, showing us why.
I mean, she really proved why she deserved that. To be number one, obviously, getting this win, and obviously for A-Rod, it's a nice confidence booster, I think, for her and the squad to move into next weekend.
And how about at number one, Seattle against Chicago, Ji So-yoon, the South Korean legend, just came over from Chelsea.
Yeah, this is unbelievable, world class. She knew exactly what she was doing. I'm sure a lot of supporters or fans might not agree with me on this, but she had placed this perfectly, knew exactly where to go, knew that the goalkeeper would have no chance at that. And obviously, despite the fact that they lost, that was an impressive goal and a good team performance in that exact moment.
And most importantly, we got the best crest in American soccer, Seattle Reign, back in the picture in the NWSL. There she is, Allie Krieger. Allie, thanks so much for the time, and we'll see you soon here on Football Americas.
Thank you, Seb. Good to see you.
NWSL on ESPN this weekend. Herc, actually opposite ends of Allie's power rankings featured here. We got Kansas City Current taking on Angel City. That one Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time start right here on ESPN Plus as well as ESPN. Time for our parting shot. U.S. Olympic team, the men's side in action against France earlier today. Both teams in Group A for the upcoming Olympics. So a bit of a preview. France going up 1-0 from the penalty spot from Arnaud Caliman, Herc.
Yeah, iffy penalty kick. And I agree with you.
Baxton Aaronson, not happy there. 79th minute, France make it 2-0. Andy Diouf.
Yeah, the U.S. had a few chances in the first opening 10 minutes. I actually thought they would have done better, put France in some very compromising positions, and the first goal goes in. France takes advantage, a little bit of domination, 2-0.
Thierry Henry, very happy with himself. Wouldn't be happy here, though. 86th minute, the Americans on the comeback path through Griffin Yao. Get in there.
Griffin Yao! Yeah, buddy! This is pretty much what it was. There were some flashes of danger for the U.S. men's national team, or saying the U23. And then look at this, Cade Cowell, do it again! And the most Cade Cowell type of goal, cutting outside to in, burying it. Look at him, 2-2.
Two goals. 3 minutes apart for the United States as they come back against France to earn a 2-2 draw. Again, both those teams in the same group for the Olympics. So we'll preview of what we'll see later on this summer. All right, Herc, that'll do it for this edition of Football America's last word here on episode 340 to you.
It gets better, Seb.
I hope so. I hope so. Probably not for Mexico, but at least maybe for Seb.
For you.
That's
for
right. You. On Thursday, Ali Riley of Angel City going to join us. Also, Derek Ray, probably talking some Bundesliga and some Americans abroad with our good friend and colleague, Derek. All right, there he is. He's Herc. I'm Seb. Thanks for watching. We'll see you right back here for the next edition of Football Americas on Thursday night.